Jeremiah Valencia had a terrible childhood, and nearly every adult in his life failed him in some way. It feels good to rip that bandage off and get that out of the way. Sometimes bold, declarative statements like that can rub people the wrong way. They tend to think you're judging people too harshly. Judge not, they say. Walk a mile in their shoes, they say. And if you know me, you know I've run a marathon in those shoes, listeners. Surely there must have been a grandparent or uncle or someone who didn't fail Jeremiah Valencia, right? A 13-year-old boy is dead. That fact alone means that nobody is innocent, and our first reflexive knee-jerk reaction should not be one of aversion and defensive posturing. Guilt can be good. We should feel guilty about this. It's our first step to acknowledge that there's something wrong. It's our first step to acknowledging that we could have done better for Jeremiah. There's an old Buddhist passage which has been translated and interpreted with a different meaning than the original, but it is no less profound. Paraphrasing, it goes, "Only three things cannot remain long hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth." In the case of Jeremiah Valencia, nobody has the high moral ground to say they did everything they could. So I'm going to say it again, because it's the truth. Nearly every adult in Jeremiah's young life failed him in some way, and the cost was his life. Our challenge now as a community is to accept our share of the blame and to learn from it so it never happens again. If Jeremiah's story can teach us how to do that, then his death will not have been in vain. I'm Eric Carter-Londine, and this is True Consequences, the story of Jeremiah Valencia. Before we get too far, I want to thank a few people. I want to thank Troy Larson for writing this script, as well as his research and the research of Jackie Moranti related to this story. I'd like to thank my newest patron subscriber, Brandy Doyebi. I also want to thank Karina Kyle for being a donor on ko-fi.com/trueconsequences. If you want to support this show, go to patreon.com/trueconsequences. Or go to ko-fi.com/trueconsequences. Jeremiah Valencia isn't here to tell you who hurt him, so I'm going to tell you for him. His mother, Tracy Ann Penna, was in a relationship with Thomas Wayne Ferguson, a violent ex-con who reportedly had a habit of running back to old girlfriends when things with Penna didn't go his way. And honestly, if you're any kind of competent character judge, you can see who Thomas Ferguson is from a mile away. And so is often the case. Poverty, drug abuse played a huge part in the family dysfunction that contributed to Jeremiah's death. But if you've lived in New Mexico for any length of time, you probably don't even notice anymore. I get that every person from every walk of life has their challenges. A paralegal with a shopping addiction, a school teacher who drinks too much. Addiction can be a prison. It can cloud judgment of the addicted, but also of those around them. Is this the kind of thing I should call Child Protective Services about? Do I really want to be involved? Tracy and Thomas were living the lifestyle you would expect from people with heroin and cocaine, as well as DUI and shoplifting offenses on their records. But nobody was able or willing to predict Ferguson's history of violence would rear its head again and result in the death of young Jeremiah. Thomas Ferguson's name deserves to be forgotten and would never pass my lips again if it weren't for his place in this story as the object of our education. How not to be a man, how not to deal with life. Thomas Ferguson is a roadmap for how to recognize a psychopath. To understand the situation between Tracy Ann Penna and Thomas Ferguson, we have to go back a bit, before Tracy, to his previous relationship. His ex-wife, Amanda Nunez, with whom he fathered a child, had plenty to say about Thomas Ferguson's history of violence. She was only 14 when she married him and stayed with him until she was 30. In those 16 years, Thomas Ferguson beat her within an inch of her life, and she suffered 3 miscarriages due to his violent physical beatings and abuse. He had his mother's brown skin, and once he punched his infant son in the chest and said, "I wish that little son of a bitch would die." Ferguson's criminal history was decades long. The Santa Fe New Mexican reported, quote, "In 2003, Ferguson was found guilty of battery on a household member in Santa Fe and sentenced to unsupervised probation for 6 months on the condition that he began court-ordered counseling within 2 weeks of establishing a new residence in Texas, where he was set to move." According to all accounts, Thomas Ferguson would not hesitate to raise his hands to someone who had the nerve to defy him. In 2014, a grand jury in Santa Fe indicted Ferguson on felony charges of criminal sexual penetration, kidnapping, aggravated battery against a household member, and interference with communications. Yeah, Ferguson had a kidnapping case that involved him holding an ex-girlfriend against her will and raping her for nearly a week. There were legal wranglings that went on for months and months in that case until, in a 2015 plea agreement, Ferguson pleaded guilty to kidnapping and aggravated battery against a household member. The plea also stipulated that Ferguson's offense would be classified as nonviolent. The story from the Santa Fe New Mexican continues. State District Judge T. Glenn Ellington sentenced Ferguson to 10 years and 8 months in prison, but the judge suspended nearly 7 years and 8 months of the sentence and credited Ferguson with 495 days of pre-sentence confinement. He was released on 5 years of supervised probation and ordered to stay on electronic monitoring for 2 years. Again and again, the New Mexico justice system failed to give Ferguson the penalties he had earned with his life of violence and abuse. In February 2016, a Santa Fe prosecutor filed a motion to revoke Ferguson's probation after a criminal complaint was filed in Sandoval County. The complaint said that when a probation officer went to check on Ferguson, his girlfriend answered the door and appeared to have signs of battery. The complaint said Ferguson admitted to violating his probation by having negative contact with people. According to a court order in which Judge Ellington found that Ferguson violated his probation, Ellington allowed Ferguson to remain on probation, despite a state probation officer's recommendation that he serve the remainder of his sentence in prison. Ferguson got break after break after break in a baffling string of blunders and misjudgments. If you need any other evidence that those closest to Thomas Ferguson knew of and feared his violent tendencies, you'll find it in noting that when they divorced, Amanda Nunez said she changed her son's name to another name so that Thomas Ferguson would not be able to find them. She also reportedly had the police check her house once to make sure Ferguson hadn't tracked her down. Her son would then remain estranged from his father for years, but not forever. In 2017, fateful circumstances converged at the home near Nambe, where Jeremiah Valencia lived with his family. Thomas and Tracy were cohabitating with Jeremiah and his younger sister, plus Thomas's now 19-year-old son, Jordan Nunez, with whom he had recently reconciled. Jeremiah, upon receiving the news that Jordan would be joining the household, greeted him like a good-natured young kid that he was. He reportedly said something to the effect of, quote, "So I guess we're going to be brothers," end quote, as he sized up the 6'1", 220-pound Jordan Nunez. Jeremiah also said, "You look like a respectable older brother." Knowing what we now know about Jordan Nunez's treatment of Jeremiah makes the comment all the more heartbreaking. Nobody could know the events that were about to be set in motion. Tracy and Thomas had become familiar to police due to previous arrests, and one press report described Tracy Ann Pena as a, quote, "regular at the county jail," end quote. On November 24, 2017, a baffling encounter with law enforcement in the parking lot of a Santa Fe area Walmart would lead to deadly consequences. It was Thanksgiving weekend, and video footage from a police officer's body cam tells us a story about what happened. One local report said, quote, "Footage suggests Ferguson was waiting in the Walmart parking lot while Pena was walking around looking for the store's propane tank exchange station. Officers Jacob J. Martinez and Heinz DeLuca also were in the parking lot, and Martinez recognized Pena as a person on a warrant list. The officers confronted her, handcuffed her, and put her in a police vehicle, video shows. Tracy Ann was arrested on two outstanding warrants for city court for a failure to appear on a cocaine charge. Thomas Ferguson's extensive and violent criminal history makes his interaction with police that morning all the more puzzling. As reported by the Santa Fe New Mexican, Thomas Wayne Ferguson was driving on an expired license, had absconded from probation, and had an active warrant out for his arrest when he encountered police officers in the parking lot of a Santa Fe Walmart. This is a good place to point out, people from all walks of life sometimes shirk their responsibilities at work, because doing that particular thing is going to create a lot of work for me. I've done it, you've done it, but when a police officer does it, it can have grave consequences. Were officers Martinez and DeLuca avoiding work when they elected to allow Thomas Ferguson to leave with the kids? Police department policy requires officers to ask if they have dependent children in their care at the time of arrest, but body cam video shows the officers never asked Tracy that. Furthermore, Tracy can be heard making reference to her daughter several times on the video. Did officers Martinez and DeLuca ignore Tracy's comments about her daughter because it would have required more paperwork and possibly calling out a child protection or social service worker on a holiday weekend? You tell me. It was in this pivotal moment in which Tracy Ann Pena was sent to jail and Thomas Ferguson was left to care for the children. And that sealed Jeremiah's fate. Tracy Pena was released from jail 2 days later on November 26th, but within weeks, both her and Ferguson had been rearrested on probation violations and were back in jail. It's in moments like these that even the darkest, deepest secrets are bound to come out. Tracy Pena had recently endured an unbelievable trauma and hadn't told a soul. I can only imagine that it was tearing her up inside. According to the Albuquerque Journal, sheriff's documents say that an inmate who was in the county jail with Pena told officials Thursday about a possible homicide. The prisoner reported that Pena had been talking about finding her son dead at home and blamed her boyfriend, Ferguson. The inmate notified authorities, who dug a little deeper. Prison phone records contained a recorded call between Ferguson, his son Jordan Nunez, and Tracy in which she hinted to the events. She said she had been crying a lot about Jeremiah. Quote, "I've been crying like every fucking day. I cried like almost all night long, every fucking day, no matter what. It's ridiculous." It was enough for investigators to question Tracy further. When confronted with her recorded jailhouse conversation, Tracy Pena claimed that she had simply been crying because Jeremiah had run away. Later, however, she crumbled. She couldn't keep up the lie anymore. And the truth came spilling out. Weeks earlier, on November 26, 2017, Tracy had been released from jail, 2 days after her arrest in the Walmart parking lot. According to Tracy, she arrived home to find her son, Jeremiah, dead, wrapped in a blanket, lying on a bed. Imagine for a moment coming home from jail to find your child dead. Imagine your partner allowing you to discover it on your own. What happened to Jeremiah? Hey friends, you probably know that I have a lot on my plate and it's really hard for me to stay focused and have the energy to keep going between the podcast, between all my travel, and then also trying to launch a nonprofit organization. I really needed a lot of help and that's why I found Magic Mind. Magic Mind has helped me so much. I used to be obsessed with coffee. I drank it every day, my 2 cups, and I couldn't do anything without it. And now I've switched my morning routine to include this little elixir that has helped me stop procrastinating and do way more work than I could on just my coffee alone. I've said goodbye to groggy mornings because now I have Magic Mind. This little shot improved my morning so much, and I love that I can take it with me everywhere and drink it whenever I need an energy boost. The best thing about using Magic Mind is I feel so much better physically and mentally. It's replaced my coffee and allows me to drink less caffeine, which reduces my coffee cravings. It makes me more productive, more focused. I get way more done in less time due to the nootropics inside that improve attention, focus, and cognition. It also helps me to not be so stressed out. Magic Mind has this calming effect due to the L-theanine inside of it. It helps your body produce less cortisol, therefore stressing you out less, which is exactly what I need. The ingredients are amazing. I think my favorite one is ashwagandha and rhodiola rosea, which decreases stress and low-grade anxiety. In a number of studies, rhodiola rosea helped improve mental clarity, which in the long run, reduced stress. Who doesn't love that? I recommend Magic Mind to anybody. I told my friends, my spouse, and everybody around me about it because it is that good. They are so sick of me because I won't shut up about it. Okay, so if you're like me, I totally recommend that you go check them out at magicmind.co/consequence. Go to magicmind.co/consequence and you could save 20% off using code consequence20. You could also get 40% off of your first subscription or 20% off of your one-time purchase using my code consequence20. Go to magicmind.co/consequence and use code consequence20. Tracy reportedly confronted Ferguson, who loaded Jeremiah's corpse into a vehicle and drove away. That claim would later prove to not be the whole truth. According to the account she gave to a sheriff's investigator, Tracy claimed Ferguson later took her to a secluded spot off of New Mexico 503 and told her Jeremiah was buried nearby. Ferguson and his 19-year-old son, Jordan Nunez, were both questioned, but to be honest, their responses were about as reliable as you would expect a murderer's statements to be. Which is to say, not reliable at all. It took many interrogations to get a straight story from either of these perpetrators, but once they did, investigators found a case that had been frustratingly short on information and eventually became a horror story with details too terrible to imagine. I recognize that this episode might have felt frustrating so far because we haven't talked about what happened to Jeremiah, and there are a couple of reasons for that. Because, you know, I always want to first make sure we're dealing with crimes against children with the due sensitivity that is required. But also, how I've told this story to you is how the public found out. The details didn't come out until the deeds were long done. Let's take this slowly. Jeremiah Valencia was a happy kid. Photos show a smiling young boy. If all you ever saw was a photo of Jeremiah Valencia, you might have a hard time believing the horrific accounts of his life. Jeremiah was 13 years old, but he walked with the assistance of a cane. Let that settle in for a bit. How healthy and strong were you at the age of 13? Jeremiah walked with a cane. Not because of some hereditary condition or an extreme case of scoliosis or some other medical ailment. He was a 13-year-old kid who walked with a cane because he had been severely beaten and abused. Over and over again. It's difficult to take any one person's account as gospel because Ferguson, Pena, and Nunez were all less than truthful and gave multiple versions of events to investigators. The sources are all out there and I've included them in the show notes if you care to look, but listen advisory here, okay? Investigators revealed much more about the abuse of Jeremiah Valencia. Not only did Jeremiah walk with a cane, but he was frequently forced to wear adult diapers because he was confined and couldn't or wouldn't be taken to the bathroom. He was sometimes imprisoned in a fireplace behind an improvised gate. Thomas Ferguson created that gate. He denied Jeremiah food and water. Thomas Ferguson had a specific hammer that he used to smash Jeremiah's fingers, according to a detective's report. There was evidence that Jeremiah had been raped and burned. He had been beaten with brass knuckles, tortured with a homemade spear, and shocked with an electric dog collar. Ferguson would sometimes make other family members take part in the abuse of Jeremiah, and fearing that they may be the next target of his violence, they complied. There were reports Jeremiah was locked in a room where Ferguson would blast loud music all night, like the boy was a prisoner of war. He was frequently confined to a dog kennel for what Ferguson deemed as misbehavior. It's so terrible to imagine. As I said, it's nearly impossible to piece together exactly what happened in light of the perpetrator's self-serving statements. But the best investigators were able to determine is that Thomas Ferguson and Jordan Nunez killed Jeremiah Valencia by beating him to death sometime around November 26th, 2017. The same day his mom, Tracy Ann Pena, returned home from a stint in jail. It should be noted that Jeremiah's younger sister originally told investigators she interacted with Jeremiah on his birthday on December 6th. Based on our research, we've been unable to determine whether she was afraid to tell the truth or just mistaken. If you know the answer to that question, feel free to email me or DM me in my social media after the show. Nevertheless, the account of the event is terrifying. Ferguson reportedly punched Jeremiah in the face so hard that some of his teeth were knocked out. The medical examiner would later say Jeremiah's jaw was broken so severely, the bone poked through the skin. Ferguson allegedly picked Jeremiah up by the neck and slammed him against the wall, turned him upside down, and slammed him down to the floor on his head several times. Thomas Ferguson and Jordan Nunez then forced a now bleeding Jeremiah into a plastic dog kennel and locked the door. Deputy District Attorney at the time, Todd Bullion, would later say in a court document, quote, Ferguson, likely sometime after Thanksgiving, beat Jeremiah to death by punching the boy in the face, choking him, turning him upside down, and slamming his head onto the ground. Ferguson then tossed Jeremiah into a dog cage and left him to die, end quote. Jeremiah's younger sister said he moaned and cried in the kennel for a while, then seemed to fall asleep. Sometime later, Jordan Nunez attempted to wake Jeremiah. In his own account, he claimed he supposedly rattled the cage, but Jeremiah's sister said Nunez flipped the cage over more than once. A medical examiner later said it was possible that Jeremiah died in the kennel as a result of positional asphyxia and blunt force trauma, but it wasn't crystal clear. It is also not clear whether Jeremiah was still alive when Ferguson and Nunez took him out of the kennel, washed his body, and bandaged some of his wounds, before wrapping him in a blanket and leaving him on the bed where his mother would find him dead a few hours later. According to a report from the Albuquerque Journal, Thomas Ferguson then forced Tracy and Jordan to help him wrap Jeremiah's body in plastic and put it into a rubberized plastic tub, which they buried off of New Mexico 503, a few miles from their home. Pena, Ferguson, and Nunez were each arrested on January 29, 2018. Initially on child abuse related charges, which would later be raised, at least in Ferguson's case, to first degree homicide. On February 1st, 2018, as the wheels of justice finally began to roll, the New Mexican reported community members held a vigil for Jeremiah. While just blocks away, police were searching his family's home. Officers searched the property for hours, scouring the garage and carrying evidence bags to a crime scene truck from 1:30 p.m. until well after dark, spokesman Juan Rios said. The community reacted to Jeremiah's death with shock and outrage, and multiple people took the opportunity to speak. This was the third violent death of a community member in recent years, one woman said to the 60 or so people at the gathering. She challenged the community to do better. This child had no one. We need to recognize that. We also need to recognize that we all had some kind of responsibility in it, the woman told the crowd. I couldn't agree more. Andrew Valdez talked about his son, Leland, who died in a child abuse incident in January 2011. He was three, Valdez said. Quote, that little boy had so much life to give, so much life to live, end quote. He told the New Mexican, quote, I just hope our laws get stronger, end quote. Valdez's mother, Sandra Valdez, was irate and through her tears said, quote, what is it going to take? These kids are our future. If the law isn't going to do anything, how can we? End quote. The concerns of the community were palpable. They wanted action. They wanted answers. And although it's always easy to point the finger at the powers that be, it would soon become clear that the answers are not always easy. The solution would need to be comprehensive, much more than just astute social workers filing reports. Jeremiah hadn't even been enrolled in school. He and his sister were removed by Tracy in February 2017. Isolating Jeremiah further and removing him from an environment where witnesses might have noticed his bruises and broken bones. Is there a way to fix that? The answers are complicated. We're talking about legislative change, law enforcement practices, sentencing and arrest standards, new approaches to drug rehabilitation, public education enrollment, offender intervention, and the list goes on and on and on. These were some of the issues on the mind of the community as the wheels of justice rolled towards the trials for the accused. Friday, April 27th, 2018 was the day that Thomas Wayne Ferguson proved he was a coward. Actually, I take that back. He proved he was a coward the second he decided to beat children and women. He reinforced that on April 27th, 2018. The man who left a young boy bleeding to death in a dog kennel with a broken jaw and an eyeball displaced from its socket did what a homicidal coward does. He murdered an innocent child, lied and denied all his misdeeds until they had been thoroughly exposed, and then he killed himself rather than face the consequences of his actions. He hung himself with a bedsheet. The following Monday, the Santa Fe New Mexican ran a story with the headline, quote, "Officials Stay Quiet on Ferguson's Death," end quote. And from the story, it reads like this. Authorities did not reveal any more details Sunday as they continued to investigate the death of accused child killer Thomas Wayne Ferguson, who was found hanging in his cell in the Santa Fe County Jail late Friday night. Santa Fe County Sheriff spokesperson Juan Rios said the investigation into the death is ongoing and that there were no other details to release on Sunday. Originally charged with child abuse charges, Ferguson's charges had been upgraded extensively over the preceding months. Ferguson's death came shortly before he was to be transferred to a state-run prison to serve a nearly six-year sentence in a different case. Ferguson had pleaded not guilty to 17 felony counts and one misdemeanor charge in the Valencia case. Perhaps the New Mexican's editorial said it best on May 1st with a headline that read, quote, "Remember, Jeremiah is who matters," end quote. To die unmourned, unlamented, such is the fate of the truly evil among us. And so it is with Thomas Wayne Ferguson, the man accused of torturing and killing a 13-year-old boy. Ferguson was found dead in his cell late Friday, hanging from a sheet. His body discovered during a routine welfare check of inmates at the Santa Fe County Jail. With Ferguson dead, attention turns to Pena and Nunez. In the case of Tracy and Pena, our research crew noticed one particular thing over the course of examining this case. She looks hard. And I don't say that in a demeaning, hey honey, you look a lot prettier if you smile kind of way. I mean, Tracy and Pena, in nearly every photo we saw of her, looked hard. Square-jawed, intense stare, but with a cynical, world-weary look that can only come from enduring a lifetime of slights and injustices, both real and imagined. She has the eyes of a victimizer by proxy who has herself been victimized. Just after Thanksgiving 2018, almost a year to the day after Jordan Nunez and Thomas Ferguson murdered Jeremiah, Tracy Ann Pena accepted a plea deal. In exchange for a plea of guilty to one count of child abuse resulting in death, she would only get 12 years. An additional condition required that she testify against Jordan Nunez, and her sentencing would not be complete until she gave her testimony against him. Jordan Nunez's attorneys, however, did not want Tracy Ann Pena to testify, and they tried to have her testimony barred from the trial based on what they deemed an inappropriate, unrecorded interview between Nunez and the district attorney's office. The judge ruled against the defense and said the interview was simply witness preparation for a pretrial interview and not investigative in nature. On the 20th of March, 2020, Jordan Nunez took a plea deal himself. Considering the date, coronavirus concerns were just beginning, and Kyle Land of the Albuquerque Journal wrote, quote, "Due to the recent COVID-19 outbreak, the court allowed 10 spectators for the hearing. Some watched the proceedings on video screens in adjoining courtrooms." Nunez had grown to be a large man in adulthood, a fact that makes his treatment of Jeremiah Valencia all the more egregious. But in the courtroom, in his prison jumpsuit, accessorized with chains, he looked clumsy and helpless. In front of a small crowd on a First Judicial District courtroom in Santa Fe, on Friday, Nunez, 21, pleaded guilty to recklessly allowing the abuse of Valencia and two counts of tampering with evidence for wrapping the boy's body in plastic and helping to bury him not far from the home they shared in Nambe. He was facing 14 to 25 years at sentencing. The sentencing proceedings were severely delayed by the pandemic, and it would be nearly a year and a half later, in October of 2021, that Jordan Nunez's sentence was finally handed down. 21 years for the death
of Jeremiah Valencia.
It's clear that this is a problem that's going to take all of us. At the candlelight vigil for Jeremiah Valencia, when a friend of Tracy spoke, she admitted Tracy had asked her for help. Quote, one woman who said she grew up with the boy's mother told the crowd that Pena had called her and asked her for help getting out of her violent relationship with Ferguson. She was afraid of this man, the woman said. The community cared about Tracy Pena, or so they said. So if she asked for help, why didn't she get it? There were other questions, too. One woman wondered how Pena, whose children were once removed from her home temporarily by CYFD, or Children, Youth, and Families Department, had custody of her two children. We didn't know she was capable of having custody, she said. We're not getting it done, friends. We have to do better. Feeling guilt is good, because it's us acknowledging there's something we could have done better. Once we accept we can do better, then we decide on our course of action. As the unnamed woman at the candlelight vigil for Jeremiah asked, quote, how do we change it? An editorial from the New Mexican addresses some of that and zeroes in on what the editorial board calls the North Star of this case. A question. How did the system, which is to say all of New Mexico, ever let Jeremiah Valencia be near a man like Thomas Wayne Ferguson? Jeremiah, the son of Ferguson's girlfriend, was failed by adults in his life, as well as by the safety net that is supposed to protect children from harm. The system's failure of Jeremiah must be tracked clearly so that improvements can be made. Ferguson, a violent offender, was serving out probated sentence on an unrelated charge. Clearly, law enforcement and social service budget and staffing issues need to be addressed. Let's continue reading this editorial piece. Jeremiah was pulled out of school, but he never re-enrolled in another public school. Students cannot be allowed to vanish after withdrawing from one school. Jeremiah vanished so well that his death went without discovery for nearly 2 months. He was buried on the side of a road. School enrollment standards need to be revised to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. Obviously, there have been some action on that front. Punishing the guilty is necessary, part of our system of criminal justice. But just as important, though, are the lessons that Jeremiah's short life can teach us. No child should ever suffer the way Jeremiah did, with brass knuckle beatings, confinement in a dog kennel, and being choked until he passed out. There are some out there who might say, Eric, it's not always so cut and dried, and some people don't know who to call. Some people are in danger if they call, and I would certainly grant you that point. However, I can also say this. You're not alone. The most recent statistics say that 1 in 5 women have suffered severe physical violence at the hands of their partner. This problem is commonplace, which means there are experts in this field. People who know way more than you or I about how to get out of these dangerous relationships. How to do it safely. Where to go. Who to trust. And how to remain safe in the long term. If you or somebody you know is experiencing domestic violence, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. You are not alone. If you know somebody or you are experiencing child abuse in your home, you can also get help at the Child Abuse or Child Help Hotline at 1-800-422-4453. You can also text them at the same number. Let's be clear, there are complications and shades of gray and multiple facets to this problem, as we've discussed. Things that make our judgment and decisions complicated, but there are also absolutes. Putting a child in a dog kennel for anything is wrong. Period. Can we agree on that? There's no justification. Beating a child with a foreign object, regardless of your feelings on religion, is wrong. Period. Denying a child food and water or access to a bathroom or a quiet place to sleep, these are all absolutes, in my opinion, absolutely wrong, unacceptable, unforgivable, and the legal definition of abuse. We must all agree and allow zero tolerance from any point of view. Yes, I said that, zero tolerance. For any point of view that tries to justify abusing a child in any way. And I'll leave you with the closing words of that editorial. Let us think of Jeremiah Valencia, his life, his suffering, and his lost potential. Jeremiah is what matters. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.